Speaker, in responding to this budget, I shall not pursue any partisan cause, for the issues are fundamental and reach quite beyond the realm of partisan considerations. Madam Speaker, as I enter into the cauldron of this debate, I find it more than proper at this juncture to refer to my opening statement at the press conference on January 21st, 2008, and I quote, "In the campaign leading up to the December 11th, 2006 general election, the UWP successfully sold a plan to the electorate that promised, among other things, to eliminate financial mismanagement and waste of public funds, thereby reducing government's annual recurrent expenditure by $300 million, to reduce consumption tax on basic food items and commodities, to control inflation through effective policies of cost containment in production and consumption of goods and services. Since this election, the UWP government has embarked on a course that blatantly contradicts what it had made the people of this country believe. It started increasing recurrent expenditure by appointing an overly bloated cabinet where every UWP elected member and senator was given a ministerial appointment of one form or another. The situation has been compounded by several ill-advised decisions that now place tremendous pressure on the government treasury and have resulted in a desperate search for measures to find new sources of revenue. Even before the announcement of higher gas prices, the government had just weeks ago increased departure taxes on locals by $33 or 95% in one shot. The following are other actions taken that have added pressure on government to find additional revenue: paying $500,000 in advance to one of its supporters in the name of 6 months' rent, $1.22 million to tourism consultant Jim Tepper, $3 million for boxing at Bossejo with none of the additional tourists promised by the Minister of Tourism, the loss of $104 million of capital budget support due to the shameful and undignified severing of relations with China in favor of Taiwan. To date, the Minister of Finance is yet to explain what development projects have been affected by the loss of such a huge sum. The fundamental economic policy that guided the monitoring and management of commodity prices during the administration of the Labour government from 1997 to 2006 ensured a price policy that aimed at suppressing price hikes on consumers, particularly the most underprivileged persons in the population." Madam Speaker, it continued, and I quote, "The pricing policy management record of the Labour Party during the decade of 1997-2006 provides strong evidence of an adherence to such a principle. Despite a 360% increase in the price of a barrel of crude oil on the world market, there was an incremental increase of only 41%. But now, in the space of a single year, and in response to 45% increase in the price of crude, the present administration has imposed a crippling increase of 34.2% on the pump price of a gallon of unleaded gasoline, a staggering increase of 45.7% on diesel, and devastating increases of 23.5% and 113.46% on LPG and kerosene, respectively." Madam Speaker, I continue to conclude. "And the single greatest achievement of the UWP party over the past year is the fueling of inflation and the escalation of food and fuel prices. This is symptomatic of the absence of prudent management of the economic affairs of St. Lucia." Unquote. Madam Speaker, instead of taking heed, instead of addressing the problem, Madam Speaker, the family attitude continues. They consider us, like in time past, prophets of doom and gloom. Despite the fact that the global landscape was littered with unanswered questions and challenges, in the face of the mismanagement of the economy, a 7% growth was projected for 2008-2009, despite being cautioned by the opposition. Madam Speaker, in an environment of uncertainty, inflation of over 7%, which was homegrown by this government, and a projected 7% growth in the economy, public servants, teachers, police officers and government settled salary negotiations at 14.5%. Madam Speaker, if inflation was kept at bay at approximately 3%, if the government was truthful not to project an unrealistic growth rate, public servants and teachers would never have demanded what the country cannot afford. However, at the end of April, despite the agreement of 14.5%, when they went to the bank at the end of the month, it was bailiwick time, Madam Speaker, for the public officers when they went. The UWP government is now saying to the public officers that it is unable to honor its commitment, its agreement. Part of the reason for that, according to the Prime Minister on page 43, of his budget address, is because there was a steep decline in revenue, particularly from customs duties, which according to the revenue estimate for 2009-2010 is completely untrue. But they blame meltdown on Wall Street, Madam Speaker. But while there are no funds to pay the public servants, the wastage in the public service continues. The Prime Minister's office is pregnant with consultants, at least upgrade 20. There are two permanent secretaries in the Ministry of External Affairs. We have a super PS, a salary of 112,800, and entertainment of $8,460. It's contained right there in the estimate, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, travel by ministers continues like there is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow, Madam Speaker. The actual for 2007-2008 travel and subsistence, 592,343. The revised estimate for 2008-2009 is over $1 million. And the estimate for 2009-2010 603,874, and that figure will develop high blood pressure and will go over $1 million as well, Madam Speaker. Passages for the 2007-2008 period, the actual was 348,235. The revised estimates for 2008-2009, $570,000, and the new estimate for 2009-2010, $500,000, and it will grow as well, because there is a positive correlation between passages and travel and subsistence, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, in the face of all of this, we have a government with men who are drunk with power and wild with new liberty. A cabinet conclusion number 402 of 2009 did, and I quote, "I shall make this a document of the House, Madam Speaker." 1.2, it states, and I quote, "The following persons will be escorted by the staff of the airport lounges or protocol staff and will be exempt from screening. And included among the list, cabinet ministers and members of parliament, permanent secretaries, and St. Lucia's ambassadors." But Madam Speaker, contrary to the Vienna Convention, ambassadors are not exempted in their own country. And the opposition members, Madam Speaker, do not want any preferential treatment when it comes to customs, screening, and security at the airport, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, but while there are no funds to pay the public servants, the wastage continues. So, Mr. Prime Minister, since the inflation of over 7% was homegrown, an offspring of incompetence and wastage of public funds, honor your agreement and pay the teachers and the public servants their increase. Madam Speaker, like the Honorable Member for Viewport North told you, the philosophy and body of principles of the Labour Party are very different from that of the United Workers' Party. The Labour Party was born out of the struggle of workers, Madam Speaker, born out of the bosom of the trade union movement, fighting against colonial governors, and who were their friends at that time? The PPP, the very PPP that merged with the NLM in 1964 to form the United Workers' Party, imposing a grossly inadequate minimum wage on the workers of this country. And the Bible says, Madam Speaker, destruction is certain for one who builds his palace with forced labor. By not paying wages, he builds injustice into its walls and oppression into its door frames and ceilings. So from the outset, UWP is in malédiction, Madam Speaker. But Madam Speaker, the St. Lucia Labour Party will never be afraid, based on its history, to support the struggles of the workers of this country. The St. Lucia Labour Party truly believes and recognizes the enormous gravity of the social and labor problems which confront this country. It believes that the safety of our country depends upon well-paid labor and the highest possible average of individual well-being. It believes that the right solution of this problem should be sought without rest and without stay, and that no device, public or private, of legislation or of individual efforts which can tend to benefit and elevate the condition of the wage-earning masses of our country should be left untried. This is why the Labour Code shall be implemented as soon as the Labour Party gets back into office, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, instead of passing the Labour Code, they are all over the place talking about death. Madam Speaker, although I gave careful and sensible treatment in last year's budget to the whole issue of death, I believe it is more than proper to bring closure to the issue and hope that members opposite refrain from debating what they are not competent to discuss. And I quote, Madam Speaker, and I shall make it a document of the House, a time to choose. Caribbean development in the 21st century. And I quote from page 44 to 45, Madam Speaker. Private investment is at the heart of growth and poverty reduction, creating opportunities, employment, increasing the choice and lowering the cost of goods and services, and providing a source for tax revenue. Economic growth is higher in countries that have higher investment rates, and growth has been shown to have long-term effects on poverty reduction. The environment. The investment environment has three main components: political and macroeconomic stability, a sound regulatory framework and efficient supporting institutions, and an adequate physical and social infrastructure. Studies on the Caribbean find that domestic and foreign investment has a significant impact on economic efficiency and growth. However, foreign direct investment has been shown to contribute relatively more to growth than domestic investment, unquote. Madam Speaker, to bring infrastructure to a standard and meet growth needs, substantial investments would be needed. The cost of making the needed investments in infrastructure would always tax the fiscal capacity of the economy. Yet, the cost of not making the investment is also high. Without the services, growth and poverty reduction will suffer. Given the fact, Madam Speaker, that official development assistance and the erosion of trade preferences were eroded, we have no alternative like the rest of the Caribbean, but to borrow. However, we borrowed to invest in essential infrastructure, to build capacity, Madam Speaker. We built schools, police stations, roads, etc. Capital expenditure, which would bring real returns. Expenditure, which has the capacity to generate revenues for our country in the future. Revenues which could be utilized to finance recurrent expenditure as well as to repay the cost of borrowing. Borrowing which are sustainable. Honorable members of Catholic Office, I think you should listen to that lecture on debt so you'll refrain from making statements in future. But members opposite continue to gossip about debt to GDP ratio. And to set the record straight, Madam Speaker, I would like to quote, and I shall make it a document of the House, Madam Speaker, the Caribbean Fund from Vulnerability to Sustain Growth. On page 22, and I quote, since 1998, average ratios of public debt to GDP in the region grew rapidly from 65% in 1997 to over 90% by 2004. Reflecting the debt buildup, fiscal accounts worsened sharply during 1998-2004 in the Caribbean. The average overall fiscal balance declined in every country, apart from the Bahamas, Guyana, and Haiti, during 1998-2004, compared with the period 1990-1997. As public debt grew, interest costs also rose. Hence, part of the explanation for the deterioration in the overall fiscal balance is the rise in interest-related expenditure. Unquote. Madam Speaker, despite the fact that we borrow to invest in capacity and to have the ability to repay in the future, we were able to manage our debt properly. Taking loans to finance your expenditure is one thing. But to manage it, Madam Speaker, you must have the cerebral competence to do so. And this is what the Labour Party is thoroughly equipped with, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, what were the results of the borrowing? What did we achieve by borrowing? According to the IMF, the SLP government did a fantastic job of managing the island's debt. We attracted billions of dollars worth of investment. Our country was rated by the World Bank as having the best climate for investment in the English-speaking Caribbean. Investors had confidence in the managers of the St. Lucian economy. This is why our country benefited, Madam Speaker, from billions of dollars worth of investment. This is why a recent assessment of the level of poverty.
Honorable members, please desist from using unparliamentary language. Member for Suffolk. Continue.
This is why a recent assessment of the level of poverty in St. Lucia demonstrated that wealth in our country is much more equally distributed today than it was 15 years ago, and the rate of indigence has dropped significantly. Unemployment was reduced from 22% to 13.6%. But since 2006, unemployment and poverty is on the rise in this country under the United Workers' Party government. A government that promised to create 7,000 new jobs in the economy. This is what you all should be concentrating on. The promises that you all made to the people of this country in your manifesto, your unrealistic manifesto. Madam Speaker, despite the turbulent times, between 1997 and 2006, the economy grew steadily every year since 2002, to the point where we recorded 5.4% growth in 2005, the highest level in 12 years. But Madam Speaker, notwithstanding the achievements of the SLP government and the different programs which were taking effect showing improvements in the lives of St. Lucians, poor people, and the very social fabric that ensured their survival continued to be vulnerable. Hence, if St. Lucia had to move to a higher trajectory of development, the overriding challenges in this regard would be employment creation and reduction in poverty. This is why, Madam Speaker, the SLP government, being aware of the fact that economic growth at the national level may not just trigger down to the most marginalized poor in every constituency, decided to take a different approach and to develop regional policy. And I shall make this document a document of the House, this is the St. Lucia Labour Party manifesto for 2006. And on page 91, Madam Speaker, it said that the people of Labri will benefit from the following initiatives of the SLP during our third term of office. The initiation and commissioning of heritage tourism projects. Madam Speaker, the whole idea was that we would rebuild Labri along historical lines. And I would like to just adumbrate the history of Labri so that this Honorable House will appreciate the development that will be taking place at the Labour Party being in office today. The village called Labri was named Ile de Kawet. And there was a small island off Labri called Askawet. It used to be a breeding ground for turtles. Labri was probably first settled by the French in the 18th century. The hurricane of 1780 destroyed most of the houses and the church in the village. The church was rebuilt by Barwon de Labouy, governor of St. Lucia from 1784 to 1789, and so the village was renamed Labouy in his honor. Labri was a very quaint village with a strong French architecture, and you can still go to Labri and see that type of French design today. So I would like to rebuild Labri, capturing its French architecture. So we would utilize the same design. We would give incentives to persons who own such buildings to renovate and preserve our historic buildings. Also, persons with vacant lots in the village would be provided with incentives if they intended to erect structures capturing our French design, not only for private use, but also to increase the number of rooms available to visitors. The eventual goal is to make Labri a heritage tourism village, with Labri's natural character being its chief distinguishing feature. Some other projects, Madam Speaker, that would have been undertaken by the Labour Party in this regard would be complete moorings at Flamboyant Avenue in order to accommodate yachts, economic infrastructure along the entire beachfront, and that would involve planning so that we could rationalize lands in the village, so that we can have our young women and other young persons in Labri employed on the beachfront. Labri has one of the longest and most beautiful bays on the island, Madam Speaker. Montley Blanc would be developed as a green area to cater for special events. And at Montley Blanc, we have a very nice view of Beaufort. So we have utilized there as a good lookout point, also a facility to generate employment for my people from Bourse-Lagoas. The development of Majomel, Madam Speaker. We have a waterfall at Majomel and some nice baths on the other side going to Kate. And it was our intention, Madam Speaker, to develop Majomel not as another waterfall, but of course as an upper Labri village, capturing life in Labri as it used to be before. So that at least we would bring tourism right to Majomel, even though you're not along the beachfront, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, in the interest of time, I will not go through the full list of projects that would be involved in making Labri a heritage tourism destination. But the whole idea, the main objective, Madam Speaker, is to use Labri's cultural and natural heritage as a tool for job creation, poverty alleviation, and sustainable human development in this constituency. It is intended to set a path for the development of heritage tourism in Labri, which celebrates the history of Labri. So, Madam Speaker, despite all this meltdown on Wall Street, we've been cushioning the impact of that particular crisis in the United States. Because the financial crisis will affect Americans in terms of the disposable income, for demand for air travel and for vacation. We understand that. But it would not prevent other activities from taking place in this country if this government had the foresight, the wisdom, the cerebral competence to understand that we need to put shock absorbers so that when external shocks impact our country, we are able to survive Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, still on page 91, it said the provision of essential infrastructure to include the completion of road rehabilitation works, construction of sidewalks and footpaths, and the erection of multipurpose courts and playing fields, and pertinent disaster mitigation works, repair of major drains and retaining walls. Madam Speaker, I have written to the Honorable Minister for Communications and Works, and we have been in constant dialogue regarding the whole spectrum of roads that were left, Madam Speaker, after the elections, because prior to the 2006 elections, we started to rehabilitate the road network in Lagos. We did the Montpaul Road, we did the Bewaje Road, we did the Laho Road, we did the road from Laho back to Lagos, we did the Pitibuk Road, we did two roads at Oje, the Debois Road and the Kate Road. But of course, Madam Speaker, since all the roads were bad in this constituency, because of neglect for many, many years, the Labour Party could not address every single road in that particular constituency. And so, Madam Speaker, whilst I do not intend to hold the current Minister for Communications and Works responsible for bad roads in my constituency, I can invite him to assist me in addressing some of the most urgent roads in my constituency. And part of that road network, Madam Speaker, which is a disaster, is the Banks Road. And the Honourable Minister, without coming on any constituency tour with me, he has actually gone on that road by himself and take a very good look at it, Madam Speaker. He knows that road very well, Madam Speaker. He knows that road very well. It's only recently, Madam Speaker, the only work that was done on that road was SFA 1999. Under the Labour Party, we had already negotiated that road from Lagos to Banks. On that road, again, with constant dialogue between the Minister and I, we were able to seek an extension so that that road was built from Lagos to Banks. And some additional resources we utilized from Mario's gas station to the bridge. But I told the Minister I need his urgent intervention to take this road from the bridge up to the Banks Junction at least. I'm not even taking you upper Banks and Valier and Adudu to fix up the road. But at least you should try to remedy that road very, very soon, Mr. Minister. Even the Monlibla Road, the alternative route to Lagos is the Monlibla Road. And again, this is a road that I've given priority. And I'm hoping that in this fiscal year, Madam Speaker, that the Honorable Minister gives attention to that road. The Monrepo Hill. This is another priority area at Sopoint. I mean, Monrepo Hill, there's practically no road. The Laboratory Road, Madam Speaker, there's a lady called Miss Ruby. Miss Ruby, that's the only conversation she has with me. She wants to see that road addressed. And I believe it's only fair to the people of Flamboyant Avenue at Laboratory that we address that road. The Minister for Communications and Works just recently, together with the Minister for Finance, approved a certain amount, and I will take a little kakada and do some remedial works at Laboratory until the Minister build that road for me, Madam Speaker. On the other front, regarding youth and sports facilities, the Labour Party started a playing field at Olibo in Lagos. The playing field was almost completed, but since the elections of 2006, it was abandoned. Just last Christmas, I graded the field, Madam Speaker, but we need to complete the field. Amana consultants had the contract, and nothing is going on. They said that the ministry has abandoned the project. And Madam Speaker, that would be unfortunate if after the Labour Party spent so much money trying to create a field for the young people of Lagos, Banks and all the areas, today for that field to be just left abandoned because of politics, that's extravagantly dangerous. So I'm calling upon the intervention of the Minister. The Minister and I, we have had consistent dialogue on that particular issue. A playing field we started at Laho through the PRF. We need to bring even that project to its logical conclusion. The Minister and I, we took a tour to Oje, and we assessed possible sites for the erection of a multipurpose court. as well as an area for playing field. And to date, Madam Speaker, nothing has materialized, not even the preliminary works have started. So I'm hoping, Madam Speaker, that during this fiscal year, that the minister worked with me in trying to address some of the problems in my constituency. Another very important project, Madam Speaker, is a sidewalk for OJ. On a daily basis, people on that road driving like hooligans, and people, children who go to the OJ school, walking on the road with no sidewalk, every single day, a potential disaster. And I would like the minister responsible for communications and works to assist me in erecting that sidewalk in OJ to protect the school children as well as the elderly, because there is absolutely no other place to walk in the OJ area. Madam Speaker, even on the question of stimulating employment, because the projects in Labrie would have kept people employed, and of course rebuild Labrie for ourselves, for Laborians, but of course attracting interest from other persons, from other communities, and from overseas, Madam Speaker. But to date, has this government pursued any industrial policy aimed at improving the situation of employment in this country? So despite the meltdown on Wall Street, Madam Speaker, the government of the United Workers' Party can still address the issue of unemployment. But Madam Speaker, there is no single solution to unemployment, because there is no single cause. The complex bundles of policies needed to reduce unemployment in St. Lucia requires, however, coordinated and coherent approach, which recognizes policy instruments, each of which is designed to deal with the different causes of high unemployment, Madam Speaker. Policies which have a strong, well-structured training content, and industrial policies that encourage the development of new products and processes hold the key to a permanent reduction in natural rates of unemployment, as well as having some potential impact on non-natural unemployment. And Madam Speaker, in the period 1997, employment and skills development became high on the government's agenda. The SLP government had set in motion a range of programs and initiatives designated to create jobs, reduce unemployment, and further boost skills development, which provided substantial new training opportunities, particularly for young unemployed people. For example, it established the National Skills Development Center to increase the training of young people. Consequently, Madam Speaker, we should focus on targeted skills development and steady improvements in the education system and the functioning of the labor market. Build on the platform of the NSDC to create a sustainable, growing job-creating economy and ensure implementation of a research and development strategy in issues related to immediate poverty, eradication, and protection of the environment. Madam Speaker, I would like to change gears at this point and refer to page 39 of the Prime Minister's budget presentation. On page 39 of the Prime Minister's address, he announced plans to expand Hiwanora International Airport because they experienced congestion during peak periods. The Prime Minister quoted some statistics that 10 years ago, the annual passenger movement at Hiwanora International Airport was 365,896, and that in the next 10 years, it is prognosticated that it would grow to 750,000 passengers. I do not know who handed the Prime Minister such statistics, but he is certainly a victim of misleading information, because in 1998, passenger movement at Hiwanora was 407,674, and in 1999, it was 442,253. In fact, if you plot historical data, Madam Speaker, and you develop a trend line, you'll realize that will experience a decline in passenger movement over the next 10 years. And this is because the global marketplace has become very competitive. One, because now more countries embrace tourism as an engine for economic growth. And of course, you have more countries competing for international traffic. Secondly, the airline industry is one that is inherently unstable, and airplanes right now are actually, or airlines are trying to withdraw from marginal routes and consolidate on a more profitable destination. Unfortunately, because of our population, St. Lucia is not attracting the type of critical mass necessary to create daily Virgin Atlantic flights, daily British Airways flights, and other major carriers from the United States of America. But part of the problem, Madam Speaker, is homegrown. It is homegrown. I remember in 1969, the late Sir John, Prime Minister of this country, during 1969, with the Canadian International Development Agency, commissioned a report in 1969. I was a very young boy. Madam Speaker, that particular report, he commissioned the report, and the assessment was done of the Viewport area and of aviation in the country. That report concluded that if Hiwanora International Airport was developed to accommodate wide-body airplanes, that they should close down the city center airport because we would be splitting traffic and we will not be able to attract the kind of passenger movement necessary. So what we have today, Madam Speaker, is a situation where regional traffic lands at George F. L. Charles Airport and international carriers land at Hiwanora. So you do not have regional and international traffic at one airport to facilitate a hub operation. In fact, most people, when they have to go to America or England, who reside in the northern part of the island, they probably take Lias and go to Barbados and take the connecting flight. In that way, we are actually creating demand for air services in Barbados at the expense of St. Lucia, which is centrally located in the Caribbean region. St. Lucia presents the ideal environment for hubs in the Caribbean region. But I guess, Madam Speaker, for political reasons, whichever political party that's in power, afraid to touch the issue of rationalization of St. Lucia's airport infrastructure. And everybody keep on blaming Jean Castri, Jean Castri, Jean Castri. But I believe if you take a high-handed approach to the whole issue, then the people who reside in the north will have objections. But if you educate people, Madam Speaker, if you open up the debate, show them why we need to move in that direction, then maybe we'll achieve some degree of success. Because I am not prepared, Madam Speaker, to stand on the opposition side, and if this government decides, look, based on our economic situation, we need to rationalize our airport infrastructure, I will lend my support to the government, Madam Speaker, because this would be in the best interest of the country. So I'm of the view that we need to start to educate our people about that particular possibility, because we'll continue to experience decline in air transport movement and, of course, passenger movement. And so ELIS is going to be a bigger problem for us in the coming years. So, Madam Speaker, that $60 million that the Prime Minister proposed to spend to expand the facility for peak period, I would ask the Prime Minister to reconsider that. Because in 1992, extensive work was done at the airport, and just to accommodate peak period. And what happened? The peak periods were only on the weekend, and the facility was just idle throughout the week. So what we succeeded in doing is to increase the unit cost of operating that airport, because the additional space had to be cleaned, it had to be cooled, and the air-conditioned units that were installed there as a result of that massive expansion caused even our electricity bill per month to be over $160,000. So if you are going to increase your capacity for the same number of passengers, you are doing nothing good for the airport. It is better, according to persons who are professionals in the field of airport economics to actually have congestion at the facility than to expand it to take care of peak periods. But if we are considering our own development in the context of rationalizing St. Lucia's airport infrastructure, then that's a different matter. But just for you and Nora in isolation, it is certainly bad news, Madam Speaker. Now, the airport. If, of course, based on the projections done, because they were forecasts done for the single airport operation, individual forecasts for George F. L. Charles and Huonora, and of course a scenario where we operated one airport. It is highly improbable. And if I have my way, Madam Speaker, I'll tell you, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for us to see 750,000 passengers at Huonora in the next 10 years. But if we move to a single airport operation, it creates a much improved framework to achieve that. And what comes with that? There is a rule of thumb in air transport that says for every million passengers that pass through an airport, you generate 1,000 jobs. And therefore, in the rural areas, with the problems that we experience with bananas, at least we can have our young people employed to cushion the impact of that particular decline, Madam Speaker. So, Madam Speaker, I do not intend to speak for 40 days and 40 nights. I take the threat coming from the government side very seriously, Madam Speaker, that they would not give me any additional time, and I will certainly not beg for additional time. But before I take my leave, Madam Speaker, I wish to speak on our foreign relations. When the St. Lucia Labour Party administration was in office, we established relations on the basis of mutual trust and respect. We align ourselves with countries that can support our own development. And we understand it was not based on romanticism, Madam Speaker, because it is not a situation where the Chinese are madly in love with us and we are madly in love with the Chinese, or the Taiwanese madly in love with us and we are madly in love with the Taiwanese. It's nothing like that. We do not establish foreign relations on the basis of love. And if at all it's love, it must be commercial love. We need to match our basic needs with greater possibilities. And at all times, we must ensure that when we establish diplomatic relations, especially in such difficult times, we establish relations that will promote our development, not the interests of individual politicians, Madam Speaker. This is why the Labour Party has a serious problem with what is happening with Taiwan in this country today. Madam Speaker, we established diplomatic relations with China when we came in 1997. It is the prerogative of this government to establish relations with any country that they want. It's their prerogative. Their prerogative. But love for country and the country's development must be paramount. And we have never said on this side of the house that we do not want Taiwanese money in our constituency. We never said so. We said it must be done properly, Madam Speaker. If Taiwan is prepared to assist us in our development, put the money through the consolidated fund, and of course, I will be very happy to benefit from development. I cannot be asking the Minister for Communications and Works, for example, roads in my constituency, and because it's Taiwan that's funding it, come to tell him I don't want the road. No, Madam Speaker, this will be totally unacceptable. But this kind of mendicancy that exists now, this kind of, if I may reach out for the mighty fund, this bah kind of thing, we're not in it. And Mr. Chu must be a gentleman, an ambassador, but this kind of thing just sleeping openly with politicians on the highways and byways of this country is totally unacceptable. That is not diplomatic behavior. That is a kaibolo behavior. A kaikipanklazo behavior, Madam Speaker. Figure it out. So, Madam Speaker, by way of general conclusion, how much time do I have left, Madam Speaker?
You are to end at 7:53.
No, I will confine my deliberations to my time. Thank you. Madam Speaker, let me make it abundantly clear right now that budgets are instruments of policy. They define the scope and purposes of government. And it is time, Madam Speaker, that this current government stop harassing members of the opposition and fulfill your promises to the people of this country. And it is time, after 2 and almost 3 years now, in the 3rd year, you all had vision in 2007. Then you all said last year, you all moving from vision to implementation. And this year, everything finished. Everything finished. Everything finished. What I hear, the song that I'm hearing, Madam Speaker, is down the road. St. Lucia going down the road with this government. And the rest of them, with Taiwanese funds sitting, relaxed in air-conditioned comfort, is singing, Saki Fet Fet, my family. Peyate Shaviwe, Ipe Mati, my family. This is not the type of impression we need to create out there to the people of this country. And I know I have gotten blows, Madam Speaker, for stating my honest opinion and stating my honest position in this honorable house and on the platform. Because each and every one of us will be judged by history. The fiery trials through which we pass shall light us down in honor or dishonor. And should I remain silent when I know that things are not right, then when I come to plead my case before the bar of history, I shall be indicted. And so, Madam Speaker, I have taken blows when I came to this Honorable House in 2007, when the late Sir John presented his budget, and I said I had no confidence that anything was going to happen during that fiscal year. And I justified my position that if I had taken my mental flight into the past, year in, year out, budgets were being presented in this Honorable House, and very little materialized. Very little materialized. And I quoted my predecessor, Mr. Vellon John, in this regard. I was taken to task. I had nothing against Sir John, Madam Speaker. In fact, when I had the opportunity to speak in this Honorable House, I recognized a man who dedicated more than half of his life to the rough and tumble of political life. Tremendous sacrifices were being made. But if I did not agree with the social policies, I stated that categorically. And I could not be a hypocrite, even when I spoke in this Honorable House, when he went to the silent continent of eternity to say that he was generous to my constituency. I couldn't do that. But I did not believe that it was the appropriate occasion to say so, Madam Speaker. And so nothing materialized during that fiscal year. And we came back into this Honorable House last year from vision to implementation. And again, I said it was an espoir mal papai budget. Espoir mal papai. And what happened? What happened? Absolutely nothing meaningful took place. Nothing meaningful in the context of what was promised. And it is time, gentlemen, that we stop this thing. We are all politicians, you know. There are certain things that we do have in common. We get pressure, we get blame for things we are not responsible for. But do not increase the specific gravity of your problems. Do not hold the opposition responsible for what is happening to you today. We didn't ask you to keep fuel artificially high so that you increase a fuel inflation in the economy. A simple thing, Madam Speaker, we told the government. If you keep fuel artificially high, you are going to create a problem in this country. For example, public servants, whether you are a traveling officer or not, higher fuel prices, it reduces your disposable income. It increases your cost of transportation. What about the fishermen who goes out there, Madam Speaker? Sometimes the fishermen don't catch any fish. Se peche a kalela, libo matin fwedi. Adan yon ni pou ale, an glou la mea, a seke libo matin. Kwen kon ope ale do. Se le yo pa chebe pa mem, yon cholo. Yon cholo. Et que ni pour payer, yo ni pour payer gaz en complexe là. So on dit yo pour crédit, yo aller yo pas faire rien. Pour yo vie payer crédit ça, pour ni pour bailler gaz encore pour yo aller. Et bien là, yo pas vie et rien. We need to take that into consideration. And when you keep fuel artificially high, it affects all the sectors of the country. And you're telling people, eat, the Minister of Health, you know, healthy living, healthy lifestyle, and eat well, and this. When a pound of dolphin is $12, ki mane male we ka manje poisson? Se mani kou yon boye manje ak yo bis baka leve presha moun. Ha?
I am guided by my standing orders that say the proceedings of the House shall be in English, provided that from time to time you may explain in Creole. So you may not speak in Creole and explain in English. You may speak in English and then explain in Creole.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I have no difficulty accepting that what you have said there is abundantly clear. A manico? A government that cannot perform. So, Madam Speaker, I was speaking about artificially high prices of fuel. What about the outlets in Katrine? In an effort to decentralize, they send a goods vehicle to every nook and cranny in this country. When fuel prices are high and they have to send the vehicles down to Labrie and other areas, they will pass on that cost to the consumers. Not because of meltdown on Wall Street, not because the global landscape is littered with unanswered challenges and questions. No, it is because of that decision at home. So it fuels inflation and it's homegrown. So if the teachers, Madam Speaker, and the other public servants are demanding increases higher than the inflation that you caused, because you had the option of keeping inflation at bay. You had the option. You see, when you keep inflation at bay, say about 3%, and you are honest and you tell the people, listen, we are going to be cautious in what we project. You are going to restrain earnings. Because that's what you want to do. We all know that unions are very powerful all over the Caribbean. You have read many reports coming from World Bank and IMF telling you about productivity in our region. You have to be very careful when you speak to public servants and teachers, because they are very intelligent people. And they do not like to be taken for a ride. And so, Madam Speaker, that's one of the points in closing that I want to remind the government that they ought to honor the agreement and pay the teachers and the public servants what you all promised. Because you all knew, at the time the government entered the agreement with the public officers, they knew exactly what the world was. And at least the price of fuel went down during that time. Revenues that were projected for the year, they surpassed that. And even the meltdown on Wall Street that would have affected certain things, they still experience an increase in tourism, although the U.S. market, they experience a decline, according to the Social and Economic Review. So, Madam Speaker, what do we have in this country? And I'm going to be honest. I am going to express my honest opinion here to what I see. And I always indicate, way ahead of time, what is to come. I'm not Nostradamus, but I can figure things out. Madam Speaker, every day the United Workers' Party government remains in office, it narrows room for fiscal maneuver. It narrows the room for fiscal flexibility. The government is not pursuing sustainable fiscal policy. Policies which contribute to the stabilization of the country in conditions of reasonable growth rates, interest rates, and inflation rate. How can you stabilize an economy where inflation is out of control and you're not experiencing growth? I see 0.7. When last year 7% was projected, was it a typo? Did you all tell the teachers it was a typographical error? You all wanted to put 0.7 instead of 7%. Did you all tell them that? Madam Speaker, the weak fiscal position of the government can affect the change of expectations on the financial market, since the current policies may lose their credibility. If the economy is in a state of flux and there is uncertainty in a country, even right now where we talk about bonds, it may affect us in this regard. Because it will make it difficult, if not impossible, if we continue to go down the road like we have been doing, for the government to finance the debt by issuing bonds. So, Madam Speaker, if we analyze the situation very carefully, and in closing, if I should ask myself three fundamental questions in reviewing this budget before I give my decision on this budget as to what I intend to conclude, I will ask myself the three fundamental questions. Fiscal discipline. Are total revenue, spending, and the surplus or deficit appropriate in the light of economic conditions, the country's development needs, and the government's taxing capacity? Effective allocation. Are the government's priorities right for building the country, pursuing development strategies, and achieving planned objectives? And three, efficient services. Is the government providing efficient and accessible public service and giving citizens value for money? And the answer to all of those questions is a categorical no, Madam Speaker. And so, I cannot get my consent to support this budget. And if I support this budget, Madam Speaker, because when a teacher said, I will not be able to go down to my constituency, Madam Speaker, because my fellow Laborians will not find it in their hearts to forgive me for coming here and supporting something they know full well is bad news for the economic and social health of Laboree and the rest of St. Lucia, Madam Speaker. And so, Madam Speaker, at no time will the opposition find itself in a situation where we are going to be misled into joining the government, they say, to present a united front for a threatening world. The opposition need to abandon its conviction and come and join with the government. There are certain things that we embrace and we are unequally yoked. And how can you ask the opposition realistically to support you when you victimize its members? When you decide to just subject us to all types of inquiry, how can you realistically believe that you can set the tone for destruction in this country, even when I ask the government immediately after the election to secure peace in this country? Because the margin of victory was slim. And in such difficult times, you need to organize your people into that integrated whole. We had to abandon partisan causes. We could not afford to split the development of this country at its political scene. And therefore, you had to set the tone. So, Madam Speaker, they never set the tone, and they continue to put division between our supporters and theirs. And certainly this is not an appropriate formula to govern in such turbulent times, Madam Speaker. Having said so, Madam Speaker, I would like to indicate in very clear terms again that I do not support the budget, and the opposition will not stand in this Honorable House and pretend, Madam Speaker, to be supporting anything that is not in the best interest of this country. I thank you, Madam Speaker.